Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Sigma Healthcare conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mark Hooper, CEO and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Morning, everyone. I'll get straight to the chase because I realize there's a lot of questions there. So obviously, this morning we've put out a market update on both the Chemist Warehouse contract and our earnings outlook for 2019, so I'll deal with them in that order. So we've announced to the market that we're no longer in discussions with Chemist Warehouse on a contract renewal, and some of you will have seen it, for at least for part of the business, there's been a subsequent announcement about signing with EBOS. I guess from a Sigma perspective, we've been very consistent all along. You know, the objective was to sign a new contract, and I think we always felt reasonably confident that was the most likely outcome. But the terms required to renew the deal, unfortunately, weren't acceptable for Sigma. Chemist Warehouse is quite entitled, obviously, to test the market on those sorts of things. But if we had signed a new contract on the terms required, we would have been announcing a halving of our EBIT, still with the $300 million of capital tied up. So whilst it wasn't the objective of the exercise, we felt on balance, if we couldn't generate any rate of return from the business, we were better to have the $300 million of capital back. And, you know, the medium-term objective for us is to get the business to a similar level of earnings and have the $300 million in our pocket, rather than, as I say, have that earnings impact in the medium term and still have the $300 million tied up. So there's a series of initiatives that we'll start working on from today, and I guess one of the few advantages of having early notice of this decision is we now get the chance to put some planning in place for what that means. That'll be around, obviously, cost outs. You know, there's fixed costs in the business that the Chemist Warehouse business absorbed that we will now start working on trying to remove. We won't get all of those out, but we believe there is a reasonable proportion we can remove. There's revenue opportunities that we think are now there, and indeed there are other M&A opportunities now that potentially come onto the table with this decision. So, as I say, not the original objective that we have, but we have been very consistent all the way through, and unless we can generate an acceptable level of return for Sigma shareholders, then we wouldn't enter into a new contract. And as I say, I just can't imagine anyone would applaud a decision where we announced we had a new contract and we'd halved our earnings in the process. So if Chemist Warehouse is able to find someone else willing to do it on that basis, fine, but it wasn't one that we were prepared to move forward with. I guess on the earnings side, we had sort of flagged at the AGM that trading conditions in the first 3 months of this year were a little softer than we had been expecting, but I think on balance we still felt comfortable that the previous guidance of underlying EBIT of 90 mil was something that was achievable. We had a very weak month of trading in May. I think originally we thought that might have been because of the PBS reform adjustments that kicked in on June 1. So for those of you who aren't aware, the government's introduced additional PBS reform measures for drugs that have been on the PBS for 5, 10 and 15 years that kicked in on June 1, and we thought maybe there was a wind down in ordering by pharmacies while those price changes worked their way through, but we've not seen the rebound in June. So we've seen a very weak period of trading in May and June. And I guess we're also being hit with the fact that those PBS price adjustments on June 1 were much bigger than what we thought. So for Sigma, there's probably on an annualised basis about a $5 million EBIT impact from those adjustments. So when you combine that with the weak May and June trading performance, we felt, you know, we'd better go back and do a review of what we expected for the balance of the year. So we've taken a fairly conservative approach. You know, we've basically assumed current run rate for the rest of the year, because I'm keen not to go through this process twice. And we start to rebuild from here. So I understand the magnitude of that change is perhaps bigger than people might have thought, but I do think the impact of the new PDS adjustments and as I say, particularly weak May and June trading performance has impacted that. So we will start to build on both the cost and revenue side to address that. But as I said in the release, that's not going to be enough to offset the impact inside this year. We've also given some guidance for 2019-20 on the basis that Chemist Warehouse stops trading with Sigma in June next year. So basically you've got 5 months of trading in next year's results, 7 months where they'll disappear and 7 months where we're effectively wearing the fixed cost that was previously absorbed by the Chemist Warehouse contract. So we're talking about a circa $40 to $50 million underlying EBIT for next year, which, as I say, is not too far off where we would have been reporting if we'd signed a new contract. So in one sense, we're in a slightly better position, albeit that in the following year we've still got to offset the contribution that we've had from the 5 months, but it does give us that runway to be able to do that. So that's probably the only comments I'll make by way of introduction, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Tom Godfrey from UBS. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, fine. Thanks, Tom.
Hi, Mark. Firstly, I just wanted to touch on the working capital release you've mentioned a few times, the $300 million. Now, I'm just wondering if you could sort of step us through in a bit more detail the mechanics of that, both from sort of a timing perspective and also how it translates through to debtors, inventory and creditors.
Okay, so, I mean, that's a net working capital across both the receivables, the inventory we invest in, and the terms we get from suppliers. I think the easiest way to think about it is if they stop trading with us in June, that money would naturally release over July, August and September next year. So that's why I was said in the release effectively by the end of next calendar year we would have the return of the $300 million, but it would effectively occur across a three-month period.
Okay, and just in terms of how the actual net impact of $300 mil translates through to the three separate accounts?
It's probably, just off the top of my head, it's probably slightly higher than that in terms of the receivables, and then there's a slight positive funding we get from suppliers. It's less so in the case of Chemist Warehouse because they've got a higher percentage of FMCG suppliers that tend to be on shorter payment terms. So it'll be maybe sort of 325 to 350 in receivables offset by I don't have the inventory and creditors figures, but probably a net 25 to 50 of funding that disappears from those lines.
Okay, that's great, very helpful. Next, I just wanted to quickly touch on the DC expansion program and whether today's announcement impacts any of those investment cases, especially sort of Kemps Creek, which was meant to be 110 mil. This year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, as we went through those decisions, we thought about the possibility of the Chemist Warehouse business not being there. So I guess for Queensland and WA, we needed to build new DCs anyway, so there's probably a slightly slower payback on those two DCs, but otherwise there's no particular impact on the economics. Kemps Creek, we will now sort of look at from a point of view of from a sizing perspective, we talked about the ability to sort of lease out the other half of the DC. One of the challenges over the next 12 months will be, I guess, seeing what opportunities come our way as a result of this decision. There will be some fallout for EBOS from a customer perspective. There'll be other opportunities that come our way. So there's this process we've got to go through of adjusting our infrastructure to suit the fact that Chemist Warehouse is no longer there without sort of removing capacity to take on new business. So the Sydney market is one where we saw a particular 3PL, 4PL opportunity, so we'll just need to work through that over the next 6 to 9 months and work out whether the best option is to significantly resize that particular DC or there's enough opportunity we see in 3PL, 4PL to leave it like it is.
Okay, thanks very much. And if I can just squeeze in one more, just around your FY20 guidance. So if we if we annualise sort of the step down in EBIT there, we're sort of landing at 50 to 51 mil in terms of the loss. Is the right way to think about that to attribute it all to Chemist Warehouse, or are there other moving pieces there you could step us through?
Without sort of understanding exactly how you've done the maths there, some of that would be a sort of step down from the change in guidance we've given for this year, and some of it would be from Chemist Warehouse. Well, because the step down in guidance for this year obviously has some impact on next year as well.
Okay, no problems. Thanks, guys. I might get back in queue.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Philip Pepe from Blue Ocean Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just, I guess, obviously disappointing. Just the impact seems to be a bit larger. So if you take the, you mentioned the FY20 guidance of 40 to 50 mil has 5 months of Chemist Warehouse in there. Let's take the bottom end. That suggests it was well over 50% of FY18 EBIT?
No, because what's happening there, Phil, is you're wearing the, because I guess you get a, what you get from all your customers is a fully absorbed EBIT, and you have a contribution of fixed costs, right? So, in terms of the incremental, the fully absorbed EBIT, it's significantly less than that. But what you've no longer got is the coverage of the fixed costs, because obviously your infrastructure is set up to be able to service them at the moment. So that's what I was talking about earlier. We'll need to sort of address that fixed cost base as part of the action plan over the next 12 months.
Gotcha. Okay. And I guess, secondly, you're theoretically 300 mil in working capital can be returned. Presumably, you would have been doing the numbers since the first signs of trouble raised its head. How confident are you that will be the full 300 mil and not a portion of it?
Very. Very. Right. I mean, Chemist Warehouse have always been extraordinarily good on the payment front, so they're very financially strong, so I don't have any doubts about getting that $300 million of working capital back. And look, the first signs of trouble makes it sound like it's been a long, drawn-out process. It really sort of came to a head late last week, because you've got to remember, we've been through, I've been through three negotiations with these guys where quite often they go to the edge and you still find a way to do a deal. And, if I'm being honest, I thought that was probably the way this one was likely to pay out. But they have obviously been given a very, very sharp deal, because don't forget there will be friction costs in moving this business. It's not easy to pick up $1.7 billion of business and shift it. So, despite the offer we put to them and the friction costs, there's enough benefit for them to be able to move it. So they've obviously been given a very sharp offer. And, good luck to them, right? They're quite entitled to go and seek that in the market. But, from my perspective, as I say, if I'd come out to the market and said, good news, everyone, I've signed a new contract, but by the way, my EBIT's halved, I'm not sure there would have been a warm round of applause. So, whatever your views on Sigma, I think we've been always good allocators of capital. And, I'm not tying up $300 million to make no return.
No, fair enough. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Carolyn Holmes from Share Clarity. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks very much for taking my call. Just to make it maybe just clearer for the analysts, maybe if you just touch on the top line. We've talked a lot about EBIT. You've talked about the reduction in guidance for the current year, which has nothing to do with the contract being down about 18% on the 90 million. So what's really happening at that top line? And if we take us through the FY20 guidance, of the guidance that you've given, how much is split between just weakness in the current market versus the contract? But maybe just touch on that top line, that revenue line. What's really happening there?
So what we're seeing is, it's exactly what I described before. It's been a pretty weak market circumstances over May and June, and I guess because it's a more competitive market generally at the moment, the ability to pass on PBS price reform has been compromised as well. When we came into this year, we were probably expecting growth of about 3 to 5% overall. So that would have been PBS pretty flat. OTC probably growing by 3 to 5% and a little extra growth because we have Chemist Warehouse as a customer. I think our expectation now is for probably broadly flat across the 2 years. So given Chemist Warehouse is growing slightly more strongly than the market, that means the balance of the portfolio is going backwards. And within that, our brands are still performing fine, so the brands are still growing. So the five brands we've got, Amcal, Guardian, DDS, Pharmasave and Chemist King, are all still growing quite reasonably. Where we've seen the real weaknesses in the independent market, which is where people like CH2 have been most aggressive. So we've not seen the growth in that independent space that we would have hoped for. So that's what's driving that result. And if we roll
so
that
just
forward
just
into next
sorry, year... if I just ask that in terms of the current year then, so and do I take from that that revenues might be down slightly, but it's more of a margin type of impact to the...
It's both.
Okay.
It's both. So revenues, as I said, revenue is probably flat year on year, right? So you're obviously absorbing increased costs on the way through, so that impacts your earnings. But the impact of the PBS reform piece, which, quite frankly, we hadn't picked. I don't think anyone had expected these June adjustments to be quite as big as what they were, and the inability to recover that in the current market circumstances means that's effectively flowing straight through to the bottom line.
Okay, so last year you had a top line number of about 4.2 billion.
Yeah.
So if we said that it was down, say, 5 or 10% in the current year, would that sound okay? So that's, what's that, 420, so somewhere between 200 or 300 million top line softness.
Well, from a retail pharmacy point of view, ignoring Hep C, it'll be about flat.
Right.
Hep C will be down a little bit again because that's flattening out. But yeah, no. If you just look at it from a retail pharmacy point of view, it's reasonably flat.
Okay, and then moving to FY20. So how much of the so how much of that was actually is the contract? So EBOS have come out and said in the first full year they're talking about $1 billion. I briefly caught. My ear caught the 1.7 that you referred to. So what are we talking about in terms of an annualised revenue impact on the contract versus just, again, just current weakness and the PBS adjustment coming through next year?
So 1.7 billion is the number we've got, so obviously that disappears. So obviously Symbion's not taken on all of the business. My guess is they haven't taken on the FMCG piece.
Right.
So that there's obviously someone else who might be taking on the FMCG piece. But for Sigma, obviously, the whole 1.7 disappears. And in terms
right.
of the guidance for... I mean, we've not previously given any guidance for 19-20. The only reason we've given you guidance for 19-20 is because everyone's going to ask what it means to lose the Chemist Warehouse contract.
Absolutely, yes.
Right, so, you know, that's our best guess, basically, assuming little or no earnings growth next year and 5 months of contribution from Chemist Warehouse. So it's our best guess at the moment as to where we think that's likely to land.
Okay. Okay, and just talking about the cost reductions, what you've talked a little bit, obviously, about the warehousing and et cetera, but what can you do in terms of some of the other major cost components?
Well, look, there's a program at the moment to review all of our costs because we have invested in quite a bit in the business over the last couple of years. So we're, you know, not all of that has given us the return that we would like. So we are unwinding a bit of that. But I guess in terms of the Chemist Warehouse piece, it's going to be mainly around the DC infrastructure. So we'll work our way through that over the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay, and my final question, you're in prior releases you've talked about the legal dispute, et cetera, with Chemist Warehouse. Is there any further abnormals that we should be taking into consideration in the current year and also next year?
No, not in terms of that. That was all settled. So
that's
no,
all
that's,
settled? Any yep. other abnormal type of costs in terms of...
The transition and redundancy costs out of the DC program, which we've flagged to the market before.
Okay, cool. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from David Stanton from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Morning, and thank you very much for taking my question. Look, I just want to confirm, pretty simply for me, just want to confirm 19, you've given CapEx guidance of 120, and in 20 you've given CapEx guidance of around the 55 number. Is that still holding as it stands? Thank you.
Yeah, look, I mean, in terms of the balance of work that we need to do to finish WA and New South Wales, that day that stands. Well, in terms of CapEx beyond that point, I mean, if we don't have Chem Warehouse, then we would significantly review any other CapEx plans that we had. So to the extent it relates to the finishing off of WA and New South Wales, that would continue. But beyond that, we'll be reviewing all of that, obviously.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Cameron from Watermark. Please go ahead.
G'day, Mark. Thanks for taking my questions. Just one quick one. Just want to understand the leverage, and you've got appointed some advisors on, I guess, how to deploy capital going forward. Just want to understand with the revised guidance and your current net debt position, what the, the outlook for your net debt to EBITDA position is and what kind of headroom upon return of the $300 million or so in working capital in FY20. What kind of war chest position that gives you in FY20 once that's all settled down?
Well, on the basis that we're sort of, we can probably gear it at about 3 to 3.5 times EBITDA, we're probably sitting in sort of capacity of $200 million of debt, and post Chemist Warehouse unwinding, we're probably sitting on $50 to $100 million of cash. So it's a reasonably significant sort of piece of capital that we have to employ there.
Okay, and anything that changes or anything strategically that you're looking at now that Chemist Warehouse is gone, does that open up other opportunities?
There's a raft of things that sort of come, you know, because, you know, we've obviously got significant capacity sitting in the DC network to look at other things. So, as I said in my opening comments, I guess the view of M&A changes slightly because of that.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Saul Hadassin from UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mark. Hey, Saul. Can you hear me? Mark, look, just very briefly, I just want to step through the maths again as to what this does to your group return on invested capital. So I'm getting roughly maybe a $40 million reduction to your EBIT from the loss of the contract. If I just apply a group EBIT margin to the revenues you lose, excluding the recent downturn that you talked to, but with that $300 million release, if I just sort of adjust your fiscal 18 ROIC, you know, steps him up to around 20% group return. Does that sound correct?
Without having done the detailed maths broadly. I mean, a lot of it sort of depends on how quickly you wind out the fixed costs that they used to absorb, right? Because on a straight EBIT for cash, you know, your ROIC would go up. You know, if all you were doing was saying the fully absorbed EBIT disappears and you get the cash back, then your group ROIC would go up.
Sure.
Right, so it's a case of how quickly you can wind out those fixed costs. As I said in my opening comments, you won't be able to wind out all of the fixed costs, right? And to some extent, you need to sort of work through it in a way that's also cognizant of the opportunities that come up, which there will be opportunities along the way. So I would think it's slightly accretive for ROIC, but I guess, pick up a line I've used before, there's no point having an ever shrinking profit and ever increasing ROIC. The idea is to grow both.
And any more colour you can add on the, in terms of those key cost buckets for your business, and when you say, you know, it will take time, where do you see those costs coming from?
It's basically your DC infrastructure. You know, we've now got a DC infrastructure, and as I've said to people at previous briefings, the bulk of the Chemist Warehouse volume went through Sydney and Melbourne. So that's where your biggest opportunity is to pull out fixed costs. Now, we had to make a decision on Sydney because of the timing of the exit from the current site. We've now got a pretty good runway in Melbourne. So we can take out significant costs on Melbourne. We can take out some costs on Sydney, probably not quite as much because we have sort of opted for a slightly bigger site, but I do think there's revenue opportunities there on the 3PL, 4PL side that will hopefully make that still quite a sensible decision at the end of the day, but most of it's going to come out of that rationalisation of the DC network.
Thank you. And Mark, just very finally, the working capital slide from your full year 18 results, I think it showed net invested capital position of about $360 million. So effectively, again, what you're saying is that would fall to $60 million, all else equal.
Without doing the maths, yes, that would be right, yes.
Right. Thank you. That's all I had, Mark.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.